This Raw Talk podcast is sponsored by our friends at Mortgage Express. We'd like to thank Alfonso Archuleta of Mortgage Express for supporting the music and ministry of M88. They're located at 3701 San Mateo Northeast at the corner of San Mateo and Comanche. Their phone number is 237-2460. It's the support of listeners and businesses like Alfonso Archuleta and Mortgage Express that makes the music and ministry of M88 possible. Thanks again to Mortgage Express and Alfonso Archuleta for sponsoring this episode of the Raw Talk podcast. And welcome to Raw Talk here on M88. As always, I'm your host, Joe. It's a show where we want to challenge you, encourage you, and most of all, get you to think. And tonight we're going to think about something that is really, really important for us as Christians. But before we get to that, a little bit of business we need to take care of. I want to thank Alfonso Archuleta, our friends over at Mortgage Express. They're sponsoring tonight's show. They're located at 3701 San Mateo Northeast at the corner of San Mateo and Comanche. Their phone number 237-2460. It's 237-2460. Without the support of listeners and businesses like Alfonso Archuleta and Mortgage Express, M88 and the music and ministry that we do would not be possible. So thank you very much to Mortgage Express and Alfonso Archuleta for sponsoring tonight's show here on Raw Talk. Also want to thank Grace Outreach Center. I had a chance to go out to their motorcycle rally yesterday afternoon, and I was pleasantly surprised. It was a really cool event. They had some very interesting events for people on motorcycles to try, including a two-man egg race that they did on motorcycles that was quite fascinating to watch. And they are very hospitable, and so wanted to thank Grace Outreach Center for allowing me to come out and hang out with them at their motorcycle rally yesterday afternoon. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the Bible, and this is a topic that is so important that if we didn't talk about it, there's really no point for us to call ourselves a Christian radio station, because everything we believe as Christians is founded on what we find in the Bible. And if we can't rely on the Bible, there is no point in being a Christian in the first place. And so this is something that I actually had to go on my own personal journey of discovery for. When I first started going into college, I was confronted with people who were telling me things like, no, the Bible's full of contradictions, or it's just a bunch of myths, or it's been recopied so many times you can't really know what it originally said, or it was just written down by men and it's not inspired at all. All these different things I was assaulted with when I went to college about the Bible, things that I never thought about before. Well, freaking out and panicking, I decided, that's very interesting. Why do I believe that the Bible is true? And I started to investigate it for myself, and what I found was very surprising. It's one of the most reliable ancient documents and manuscripts that you can come across. And yet, not very many people know that. So tonight, we're going to take a closer look at the Bible, and we have a very special guest with us, Dr. Harold Sala, who is joining us. He just wrote a book, Why You Can Have Confidence in the Bible, which is a very apropos title because it's something that a lot of people need in this day and age. So, Dr. Sala, thank you so much for joining us tonight here on Raw Talk.
Well, thank you, Joe, and it's nice to be able to chat with you and all of our friends in the Albuquerque and New Mexico area. I love your country, man.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's been a little hot recently, but it's still a dry heat, so, it's not so bad.
Absolutely.
Well, now, why don't you tell everyone just a little bit about yourself and, how you came to the point where you decided, man, I really need to write a book about why people can have confidence in the Bible.
Well, to be very honest with you, one of the reasons that I first became interested in this book is I wanted to know whether it would hold water for myself. And that's when I first began to really study the book. Eventually, took 3 degrees, including a PhD in Bible with proficiencies in Hebrew and Greek. And for the next 45 years, I used that in doing a 5-minute commentary that's heard all over the world, translated into about 17 languages, heard in 49 of the 50 states, released on about 1,000 radio stations across the U.S. So I really try to bring things down to the bottom shelf, where ordinary people can get a handle on something and confront the truth. I never hit somebody over the head with this book. It is not a club. It is a source of life, but it's widely misunderstood. You know, you were talking about when you first went to college and people would confront you. How can you really believe this book? It's been translated and retranslated. You know, when somebody tells me that, I have a little fun and say, you believe in the scientific method, don't you? Oh, yeah, of course. Uh-huh. I said, well, you must have really made a study of this book to have come to this conclusion. How long have you been studying the book? Mm-hmm. And you nail the guys every time because they heard somebody say something. I read in World Magazine just this last week where Albert Einstein said that the Bible was, quote, a collection of honorable but still primitive legends which are nevertheless pretty childish. And it isn't that somebody like that isn't intelligent. It's just that they have never confronted the issue as to whether it is credible or not.
Yeah, I read that same quote myself. That was very interesting that came out. And it was one of those things where when a quote like that comes out, a lot of people are going to go, aha, well, you know, that's what Einstein thought. Then obviously he was on to something because he was Einstein. And
but
people just take his word for it.
We really get intimidated. My friend Jeff Wasuju, who is vice president of Fuji, says that he enrolled in a biology class at the University of California at Irvine. 400 kids in that class. And the first day, the professor said, how many of you believe in God? Well, he was a pastor's son, and he was intimidated, so he sat there, and he didn't raise his hand. And then the professor says, well, by the end of this class, I will show you what a fool you are if you really believe that there is a God. And when you're hit with those things, and you think, man, this guy has, you know, three little letters after his name. He's an authority. He's written a lot of books. He must really know. Or you pick up some of the contemporary magazines. Let's say, for example, that there's an archaeological find that is tremendously important. Well, then you also have to have some liberal or someone who is absolutely off the chart who says, yeah, you can't really believe that because blah, 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 blah. That is why Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code had such credibility. And vast numbers of people read the foreword. He says this is absolute truth, so it must be right.
Yeah.
Well, and so that's why I've written the book, Why You Can Have Confidence in the Bible. It's like my friend Rick Warren says, you only believe the part of the Bible that you do. And when you look at the Christians today and then you compare their lives with those who have no faith whatsoever, you often have to see there's not much difference.
Yeah.
And I came to the conclusion that a lot of people approach this book cafeteria style. If I like it, it's okay. And if I don't, well, we'll skip over that. It's dry and dusty and, you know, we'll push it aside. And God never intended us to do that. Either you accept it as God's truth or you have to push it aside and reject the whole thing.
And
so one of the reasons that I wrote this is to help ordinary people get a handle on credibility. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to do a 180-degree reverse about face, but I do know that if you have questions, your faith is affected. And if you're not sure that it's trustworthy, it's like a bridge that's likely to let you down in the middle of the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And you're hesitant to really put your weight on it.
And that's actually something that apparently is happening to a lot of Christians in our society today. We had our research assistant, Sorrell, dig up a few numbers that I thought was kind of surprising. And actually some of the research that you have in your book was even surprising as I was reading through that. But some of the numbers we found, 35% of born-again Christians do not read the Bible at all, which I find absolutely astounding. According to a Gallup poll, 6 in 10 Americans say they read the Bible at least on occasion, every now and then. And readership has declined from the 1980s from 73% to 59%. And then when you take a look at whether or not people really believe what the Bible has to say, well, then it gets kind of crazy. In 2006, 48% of all adults agreed strongly that the Bible is totally accurate. Now, some people might be thinking, well, that's terrible, only 48%, but that was an improvement. Because in 2002, it was 42%, and in 1991, it was only 35%. So we're getting better, but still, it's less than half of people say that the Bible is totally accurate. And some of the stuff you had in your book was just as astounding, especially when it came to Christians who are like, I don't know if it's totally true. I just go to Sunday school and listen to it, but I don't know if I can apply it to my life. It's just a bunch of stories. Now, why do you think this is the case? Why is the Bible so often written off as just some sort of irrelevant collection of myths?
Well, my answer will rub the grain of a lot of men who stand in the pulpit every Sunday. But I really believe that in many, many cases, instead of preaching the integrity of the word or dealing with the whole thing. Pastors will lift a verse out here, lift a verse out here. In some cases, they will go to three or four different versions so that whatever they find there, they can craft to really, you know, baptize whatever they're going to say anyway. And subsequently, many people get the feeling, well, it's a really nice book, and, you know, oh yeah, we better have one because everybody has a Bible, but they don't really take it seriously. And until you take it seriously, it doesn't really affect your life.
Mm-hmm.
Woodrow Kroll, who is the voice of Back to the Bible, says that the Bible won't affect somebody's life unless they have about four encounters with it of some kind every week. Which might mean you read it on your own, you're in a Bible study, you hear a message, you listen to M88, or you do something so that you really come to grips with the message of the Word. It is a living book. It's a fascinating book. No other book in all the world is quite like this book when it comes to its uniqueness. And subsequently, we revere it, but we don't take it very seriously.
Well, I want to get into some of the specifics about why we can take it seriously. We're talking with Dr. Harold Sala, who wrote the book, Why You Can Have Confidence in the Bible. And here's what I want to suggest. If you're listening and you've ever had a question about what the Bible is, why do I believe that's true, get that issue cleared up right now. I mean, we got a guy here who can answer your questions. Don't let this sit. Don't be one of those people like, yeah, maybe I should figure it out, but I'll save it for later. It is never more crucial, and has never been more crucial than it is right now, to know that you can have confidence in the Bible. So if you've ever had questions about that, give us a call, 505-338-5790. Don't let those questions wait until you get to college. One of the other numbers I came across, people who have an education through high school, about 71% of them think that the Bible is mostly to totally accurate. When you get to people who have a college education, that drops to 56%. Something is happening when people go to college where suddenly they freak out and think, well, I can't really depend on this book. Get those issues solved and resolved before you go to college. So when you go, you can stand firm on the Word of God. And let me just say, I don't know if you've had similar experiences, Dr. Sala, but when I was in college and I knew what I knew was real, why I believed what I believed, and I was able to stand on that, it turned into some very interesting conversations. You're talking about a biology professor saying, you know, I'll show you why you're a fool to believe in God. I had an astronomy professor who basically treated me the same way, a little bit more respectfully. And at the end of our semester, I wrote some paper talking about how amazing the universe is because God created it. And he said, in a very condescending but kind tone, well, I can see that this course hasn't changed your mind. I hope someday that it will.
Hasn't done you a lot of good at all.
Right. You know, he was very kind of condescending, like I'm not the brightest person out there. And I just said to him flat out, well, I can see that my writings hasn't done the same for you either. So I hope someday maybe your mind will be changed.
You know? When you repeated the class next time,
yeah.
You had a different teacher.
Well, fortunately, he was a fair professor. And, you know, I did the work. And I did it according to his parameters. Since, you know, so I got a decent grade in that class. It's just he thought I was somewhat of a moron because I had this whole concept of God that wasn't shattered by all of his really good scientific facts.
Expelled, right.
Yeah.
Einstein's expelled.
Yeah, so it was very interesting. And all that to say, don't let that happen to you. I came across so many college students who were so intimidated when they got to college because they're being told the Bible is bunk. And if you believe in it, you're a child. You're here in college. It's time to grow up. It's time to become an intellectual. You don't have to believe in these childish stories anymore. Don't be intimidated by that. If you have questions, give us a call, 505-338-5790. Now, let me just ask this just as another general overview question. Why is it so important for us to know that the Bible is accurate, that it's scientific and archaeologically accurate, and why we need to know it's true? Why is that so important for us as Christians?
Well, it's kind of like this show. Let's suppose that you are out in the backcountry and you're lost. And you're trying to figure out how you get back to where you started from. Well, if you have a GPS unit, you get a fix on the satellites. If you got a compass, well, you've got a true north. And then from that point on, one of two things happens. You either say, I think I'll take my chances, or I will trust this thing because I believe there is reason that it's telling me which way to go. And that is why people today are in a moral wilderness, and the three big questions of life deal with our existence. Who am I? Where did I come from? And what lies after my last breath here on earth? The Bible is the only thing that gives you the answer to those questions. And for centuries, this book has been a valid guide through the wilderness of human experience. And subsequently, if people are if it's untrustworthy and you're not sure that it is really accurate, then there's nowhere to go. It is like Sartre said, there is no exit to life. And in that case, you take the existential way out. And, you know, we have so much of that. It's manifest in some of the hard rock music. It is the fatalism. It is the, well, there's no hope for the future that seems to possess so many of our young adults today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wrote the book. I had 50 years of background going into this thing, and then I took a couple of years. I can tell you, of the 41 books that I've written, this is the only book that I have ever felt compelled to write. It is like, I have to do this because I think it will make a difference in the lives of some who are really wondering, is this trustworthy?
Well, I'm glad you did. I remember when I was in college and I started doing my own research, one of the guys I leaned on a lot to help me out with some of my research was Josh McDowell.
Josh McDowell,
yeah,
right.
His Evidence to Demand a Verdict was a great resource for me, not only as a resource in itself, but it also pointed me to other areas and other books and other sources to look at. And you know, looking back on it, it's like, well, it would have been nice if Harold would have written his book when I was in college, and that would have helped out a lot, too. We do have a caller on the line. Danica is on the line. Welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, Danica?
Well, I just was wanting to say, like, a lot of the time, you know how in, you know, modern society, they really push it on you. They're always saying, oh, yeah, freedom of speech and such, and yet they don't apply it to us, and especially in science class, you know, that's the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
They try to put me down for this,
mm-hmm.
and they really act like I'm a dunce.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom of speech is very important as long as it's the other guy. But when you stand up to the mic and you have a speech to deliver, hey, you're off the wall, you know, shut up and take a seat in the back of the class.
Is that how they're treating you, Danica?
Kind of.
Yeah.
They all stare at me and act like it kind of reminds me of these different parts in this new movie that they came out in theaters that's very controversial. It's called Expelled.
Uh-huh.
And it's questioning it's basically a movie questioning evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, presenting the topic of intelligent design in different ways. And this one part, these actual, you know, scholars and evolutionists, they actually do say, yeah, I think Christians really are kind of stupid and they really are kind of ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of silly for them to believe in such a old book when we found so much evidence. There's overwhelming evidence. This is true.
You know, Danica, I was out of the country when the movie was showing. I just went online to see if I could buy the thing. But I know the premise, and there is a tremendous amount of prejudice when it comes to the scientific community that a priori they have closed their minds to even the existence of a God. And then they come back with this thing, well, who created the creator, you know? And it's an endless cycle without actually looking at the whole scope of this thing and also considering the impact of this book down through the centuries and how it has been transmitted for hundreds of years and with reasonable certainty that we have the text as it was written, very, very close to it back in the very beginning.
You know, one of the things I thought was fascinating when I was in school is they'd say things like, oh, we don't know for sure if the Bible that we have today is the Bible that was, you know, what they had in ancient times. Now let's study Odysseus. This is an amazing piece of manuscript that we know, blah, 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 blah. And when you look at the evidence, especially for the number of manuscripts, there's far more evidence for the accuracy of the New Testament than there is for anything that was dealing with Odysseus or any of the ancient epic poems. And why do you think it is that the Bible, Dr. Sala, is not treated with the same type of scrutiny that other ancient manuscripts are treated with?
Okay. John Warwick Montgomery, who is a historian, says that there are four documents that refer to Tiberius Caesar. All four of them are in conflict with each other. But nobody ever makes a big deal out of, well, did Tiberius Caesar do this, or did he live here, or what? I mean, it's like, who cares? Doesn't really matter. But when it comes to this book and the message of this book, the bottom line is it brings us into confrontation with a creator. And that is where people really squeam because they don't want to recognize their personal accountability to God. And therefore, we simply categorically deny the whole thing. And that is where the big problem comes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are exceptions to every generalization. But by and large, when I have met individuals, whether they were in the classroom or even those who were in the professional community, and they make these categorical generalizations, and I prod deeper, I find the scientific method of investigation and analysis, then decision, has been totally pushed aside, and it is a prejudice a priori without ever examining the evidence. And that's the flaw of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because when you take a look at the evidence for how the Bible has been copied, how it has been transmitted through the centuries, it's really quite astounding. Danica, thank you so much for calling in tonight here on Raw Talk. We appreciate it.
And Danica, hang in there. You know what you believe. Stand fast.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
I would say the same thing. Keep doing what you're doing, and you know what? When it comes down to it, we all know who the smart ones are. They're the ones who believe what God said. So don't worry if everyone else thinks that you're not as intelligent as they. When the final trumpet sounds and every knee will confess and every tongue will confess and every knee will bow, well, then we'll see who is smarter than whom. So thanks for calling in, Danica.
Okay.
And if you have a question like Danica or like making a comment, 505-338-5790. And again, I can't emphasize enough how important it is for you to resolve those issues you may have with the Bible right now. Don't wait. Don't put it off. And Dr. Salem, let me ask. Is there really any point in being a Christian if we don't believe that the Bible is true?
Well, you're on shaky evidence. I mean, because if you don't really believe it, then you can't be sure of anything. I mean, how do we know that Christ rose from the dead if we do not believe that the record is credible?
Mm-hmm.
That Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and the writers of the New Testament gave us accurate accounts of what took place. And then subsequently, little by little, the whole thing begins to collapse, and you find you're out there on thin ice with nothing really to support you. And you know, in the last several years, we've got a new genre. They call it new atheism. Atheism is not new, but it is a very subtle approach that really says vast numbers of people no longer buy into this. And there are individuals, and I have met some of them, who say, at one time I was a born-again Christian, I was out there witnessing, but then I went to, and they mention a particular school, and gradually their faith was totally undermined until they began to disbelieve everything they'd ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the real danger comes. You need to know what you believe and also why you believe that. And I don't say, hey, these guys are a bunch of idiots or fools. They're intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is they know some things that just are not true. And C.S. Lewis said, you got to know what a straight line is before you know what a crooked one is. And they have nothing by which they can measure truth. So subsequently, it becomes very existential. And you push aside the relevancy of Scripture or the testimony of the church for 2,000 years.
Well, 505-338-5790, if you have a question that you'd like to ask, again, this is the perfect time to do it. Don't let these lingering doubts about the Bible haunt you. Get those resolved so that you can move on with confidence and make a stand for what you believe in. 505-338-5790. And real quick, Dr. Saylor, let's deal with the whole concept of contradictions. And this is something that was always shoved in my face. When I was in college, people say, well, I don't know how you can believe in the Bible. It's full of contradictions. Of course, the first thing I would ask was like, oh, really? And what would be an example of that? Of course, then they would look at their feet and notice that their shoe was suddenly untied or something because they never really read it to find out. But let's ask the question. Is the Bible full of contradictions? And what should we do if we're reading it and we come across what may appear to be a contradiction?
Well, first of all, the book that I've written is not one that really deals with contradictions. There are numerous books that do that. And most of those, quote, contradictions can be readily resolved when you know the context or who said what and when. But there are times when there is an apparent contradiction, and that's where you begin to dig a little deeper. For example, I'd love to tell about the walls of Jericho. You've got a blind man, and both Matthew and Luke tell us that he was sitting at the gate at Jericho. But one of the writers of the gospel say that as Jesus was going into Jericho, the blind man was there. The other says he's coming out of Jericho. And, of course, people said, aha, here's a contradiction. How can you be going into the city at the same time you're going out of the city? Until back in the 30s, Catherine Kenyon, who was an Amazonian kind of a woman, she was about 6 feet. I mean, she was the Indiana Jones counterpart. She discovered that in the time of Christ, there was a population explosion. And in those days, you built the walls of the city to keep people out. But that also meant you had a perimeter around the growth area. So what do you do when you need to expand? You go outside the city and you build another wall that surrounds that new growth area. So here's Bartimaeus. He was blind, but he wasn't stupid. He knew that when you passed from the old city into the new, or the new into the old, you had to go through that gateway. And that is exactly where this guy was when Jesus came along. But one of the writers of the gospel say, hey, Christ is going into Jericho, meaning he's going into the new Jericho. And the other one says he's going out of Jericho. So, I mean, the contradiction is resolved.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of examples of that. And it's one of those things, like we've mentioned before, when people bring it up, they really haven't looked into it. They just are repeating what other people have heard. Oh, well, I've heard other people say there's contradictions in the Bible. Well, you go find one, and then we'll take a look at it.
Okay, great.
Yeah. We have John on the line. John, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say, John?
Oh, not much, guys. I was just actually, this is the first time I ever called in or even listened to your radio show. I was trying to actually find the Celtics Lakers games on the radio.
Well, I'm glad you stopped in.
What's that?
I'm glad you stopped in.
Oh, well, thanks for having me online. I was listening to the author there, and it sounded like from his book, and I'd hate to misconstrue this or maybe get the wrong idea, but he kind of painted the picture that what people would consider, say, atheists, agnostics, secular humanists, or things of that sort, those types of people are kind of lost in the world around them. They don't know where they're going in the grand scheme of things, and they also might even paint the picture that they're a little bit depressed and maybe have a low moral standard. And I was going to ask you, why exactly do you need Christianity as opposed to, say, some other form of religion like Islam?
You know, that's an excellent question, John, and it's actually very apropos to what we're talking about, Dr. Sala. How do we know that the Bible is inspired as opposed to other books from other religions?
Well, John, actually, there are two questions. The book that I've written deals with this whole issue of biblical credibility. The manuscript evidence is the strongest thing. I also talk about prophecy. I talk about the collation of a secular of scientific facts with what the Bible actually says, a whole bunch of issues in that regard. But let me go back to a minute to what you said. Today, one of the big questions that are on the minds of people is that of existence. I mean, who am I? Where did I come from? What lies 5 minutes after I die? And subsequently, the Bible is the only book that really gives you a framework when it comes to this issue of existence. And that's, I'm not suggesting for a minute that somebody can't be an atheist and still be moral, but I do know one thing. The Bible gives you a foundation for morality and for ethics that is lacking in other, quote, religious documents. And that is one of the reasons why the Bible has been the foundation of Judeo-Christian ethics for hundreds and hundreds of years. It is the foundation, really, of Western law. And subsequently, it is a whole different ballgame than you have, say, in the Quran or you have in other religious writings. It stresses the dignity of the individual, the importance of treating the other person as you want to be treated. And all of this includes morality. I personally feel that it is exceedingly difficult to have either morality or ethics, apart from the fact that if I treat you nicely, then you treat me nicely, outside of what the Bible really says, and that includes accountability. So I don't know if that makes sense, but I am saying that this business of existence and what life is about is a paramount issue to people today.
Now, and I think this might help you out also, John, how has the Bible impacted people throughout the centuries that is different from how other religious texts have impacted people, Dr. Sala?
Well, It all depends on, okay, let's say you look at Eastern life, the impact of Buddhism in relationship to, say, Western Europe and in the United States where Christianity has impacted those people. When you look at who has built the hospitals, the universities, who have reached, I mean, for example, I have just come back from Asia, and both we've been involved in relief efforts in both Myanmar and also in China. And even in China, which is a communist country, thousands and thousands of Christians have rallied to provide either tents or relief or support. And they were individuals who were simply motivated because of the compassion they had for people who suffer. I'm still waiting to hear about great universities that have been founded by atheists, or atheists who are going into Africa and feeding the children who are starving, or establishing outreaches for HIV patients. Now, maybe there are some, but I just haven't heard about them.
Well, I could. I do. You know, Doctor, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry about that. But I have heard that, where you're saying you've yet to hear. I believe you're familiar with the gentleman by the name of Andrew Carnegie, in which part of the name of Carnegie Mellon University, the steel tycoon, is the largest philanthropist in American history. A lot of institutions, and of course, you know, all the Carnegie libraries. I grew up in a very, very small Midwestern town, and the library we had in town was founded from the endowment when he died, and he was a very ardent atheist. I take a look at a gentleman by the name of Warren Buffett. Are you familiar with Warren Buffett?
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
Who isn't?
$38 billion he donated to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation when he died. And he, too, the atheist. And I've actually met him two or three different times, just randomly when I had to go to Omaha for business. A very nice gentleman and person very concerned with the well-being of others. And then finally, we take a look at, say...
So are you saying Buffett is an atheist?
And then I would also go on to say then Bill and Melinda Gates, in which maybe they may not call themselves atheists, but they may be consider themselves more of a secular nature. I mean, I know they are for sure not of the what we would consider mostly with a right-wing Christian type of belief. But they also donated a lot of money towards... you know, for AIDS research.
I'm glad to hear that.
And then the other thing I would have to say is, and I know that we use this Bible for morality, and it's and I think it could be in some cases a very good thing, and then but in some cases it can be a very bad thing. I don't know if have you ever been to Africa and seen some of the missionaries around there?
You bet I have. My wife just finished a book about a woman in Kenya who didn't know that you can't do anything for people who are suffering and who are living in poverty. I went to Africa probably 30 years ago for the first time. But anyway, what's your point?
My point is in there is that this idea of, it seems like in a lot of Christian doctrine, especially me, I don't try to say that the Catholic Church stance is universal across, you know, Christendom and Christian theology, but I think there is some similar parallels by saying that premarital sex is a bad thing, and maybe even using a condom is a bad thing as well. But then when you take a look at the AIDS epidemic that's going on in there and the amount of children that are orphaned because there isn't really a strong Christian organization in Africa that's telling people, you know, this is how you can get AIDS and this is how you can use a condom. I have had firsthand seen from even non-Catholic missionaries in Africa of, you know, telling them that not to use condoms if they do have sex because it's against God's plan, and that, and then later you can only construe that, well, I guess it's okay to orphan children because the parents have, you know, got AIDS instead of trying to protect themselves from sex.
Now, John, hold on just a second here because we're getting off a little bit on a tangent from what we're trying to focus on tonight, which is why do we think the Bible is true? And here's something that I want to leave you with to think about. So far as this issue of morality and what do we make our standards by, that's something that we can discuss and it can go around in circles for a while and we can talk about these tangent issues. But I will tell you this. In the Bible, Jesus claimed to be God. And he is someone who was able to actually back up that claim. Now, what you have to decide to do when it comes to how you're going to deal with the Bible, and this is the cornerstone on which it all stands or crumbles. What are you going to do with that claim of Jesus when he said, I am God? Because if someone were to do that today, you'd probably think they were a lunatic. Or if they were to do that today, you'd think that they were a liar. And yet, this historical figure who, you know, scholars all agree he existed. He walked the face of the planet, and he did say, I am God. This guy convinced not only a dozen followers, but those followers continued to perpetuate what he said. And now you have millions of people who believe that Jesus Christ was indeed God in the flesh, who came to earth to die in place of us for our sins, and then rose from the dead and ascended into heaven, all of which is historical fact. You can actually go back and look up ancient manuscripts that back up what the Bible says so far as the death, resurrection, and life of Jesus Christ. So all these other issues, which are very important, John, don't get me wrong. I agree that these are important issues to resolve. But before you can really dive into dealing with that, first thing you have to do is decide what to do with the claim that Jesus made, I am God in the flesh. And once you decide what you're going to do with that, then you can move on to trying to figure out some of these other issues. I mean, what would you add to that, Dr. Sala?
Well, I'm totally right. I mean, history speaks very clearly to this point, and the issue is this book trustworthy? It tells us that Jesus says he is God. Okay, has this been doctored, or did he really say that? And that's why my whole book does not deal with some of these little side issues where you can get sidetracked very quickly. But what is the case for biblical credibility that involves a whole bunch of issues? It includes the manuscript evidence, archaeology, prophecy, science, the impact of changed lives. And you take the whole scope of this thing and you say, okay, if this is trustworthy, then I can go one layer deep. And that is who Jesus Christ is. And what are the facts of his life? Was he born of a virgin? Was he crucified? Did he rise again from the dead? And is he really coming back as he said he was? That's the whole issue.
Hey, John, we got some other callers on the line, so we're going to have to move on. But I'd like to give you a copy of Dr. Sala's book. Would you be interested in that?
I would actually be more than interested to read it because I am an open-minded person.
Okay.
And my email is in the back of it. I'd be glad to hear from you after you've read it.
All right, John.
I have a question for you. Just one more quick one. Do any of you two have daughters?
Yeah, I have two daughters myself.
If your daughter came home and said, I am pregnant, but it was immaculate conception, would you believe it?
Depends on what the evidence was.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your time, guys.
All right, John, hold on. I'm going to put you on hold, and we're going to get you a copy of this book and come by the station and pick it up. And, again, if you have more questions, you know, you can email us here at studio@m88.org, or what's your email address, Dr. Sala, for him to get in touch with you?
It's easy, harold@guidelines.org, G-U-I-D-E-L-I-N-E-S.
All right, John, hang on. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get you a copy of this book, and thanks so much for calling in tonight. I'm glad you raised some really important questions that certainly relate to what we're talking about tonight. And I hope you find the Celtics-Lakers game so you can find out how that's going. Thanks a lot, John. All right, hold on. So, John calling in. If you got a question that you'd like to follow up on, like John had, give us a call, 505-338-5790, and we're going to get John's information and get him a copy of that book. Next, we have Samantha on the line. Samantha, welcome to Raw Talk, and what do you have to say?
Hi. I was just calling to say that I learned this. I was in Awanas a few years ago, and they were telling us how, you know, people say the Bible isn't real, but how can it not be real? And how could you say that, you know, you came from, like, a planet or whatever? Because in the Bible, there are so many things in there that relate. And different guys over hundreds and hundreds of years wrote this, and it all fits together. And that was my comment.
Well, that is a very good comment. And would you like to expand on that, Dr. Sala? I mean, Samantha brings up a good point. This Bible is a conglomeration of many authors over many centuries. And how is that possible?
You know, you're absolutely right. There were 40 individuals penned the documents that comprise our Bible over a period of over 1,600 years. And, you know, Samantha, in many cases, what they wrote flew in the face of what was popularly believed in their day. For example, when Moses wrote, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," that flew in the face of what was commonly believed in Egypt, say 1400 BC, because they believed that the earth was hatched from an egg. And you go to Egypt and you see the sarcophagi, you see the pyramids, you see the egg, which was used very commonly, symbol of fertility. And so who's this guy Moses saying that God you know, created this. Why, everybody knows that is not true. And it seems that, by and large, what they wrote often flew in the face of what was popularly believed, just as what the Word says today often is contradicted by the secular community that says you can't believe that. It's unique in its structure. You have different kinds of literature that come together, unique in the claims it makes, like the grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God endures forever. It's unique in its formation. It was compiled over a period of centuries, and it is absolutely unique in the way it impacts the lives of people. Now, this is not the only book that has resulted in changed lives, but I can say very fairly, no other book in all the world has changed the lives of so many people for the better as has this book. Even in China, I just came out of China. China's a communist country, but the Bible is still the unofficial best-selling book in that country.
Yeah, I heard that on the news. I was like, wow, that's really strange.
Pretty fantastic.
Well, Samantha, thank you so much for calling in with your comment, and I'm glad you brought that up. You have a great evening, all right?
You too. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. You bet, Samantha. Take care. Well, 505-338-5790 if you'd like to call in and add to tonight's conversation about the Bible. And, you know, just on what you were saying, Dr. Sala, about how it impacts people's lives, you know, when I have gone and looked at other religious texts, and one of the things I have noticed you know, not so far as the warm, fuzzy feelings that they give people, because you can get that from a lot of religious, quote-unquote, religious experiences. But the thing that always stood out to me about the Bible and that gave me so much confidence was the fact that it is so historically accurate, is so scientifically accurate, it's textually accurate, that when you look at just some of those basic facts compared to other religious texts, they just don't have the same consistency and accuracy in so many different areas as the Bible does.
Right. One of the chapters was really fun writing, and it was one that I had to really limit what I could include in that, is one that Greg Laurie said was his favorite. You know, he's a pastor and evangelist, mm-hmm. and that is the chapter on changed lives. And some of the individuals that I wrote about are people that I have known personally, and how God used that book to totally change their lives.
Yeah, and, you know, we mentioned Josh McDowell. He's a guy who was changed by just the fact that he wanted to find out if the Bible was true, and his investigation changed his life forever as he looked into it.
He was a real rebel, an atheist and a rebel, but he when he was confronted with the truth, he said, yeah, this makes sense, and he took it and ran with it.
Or guys like Lee Strobel, who wanted to approach it as a court case.
Sure. You know,
if there's enough evidence to support the claims of the Bible, or if not, then throw it out. And another guy who just strictly on the evidence, not the warm, fuzzy feelings, not how it made him feel inspired or any of that, just strictly on the evidence, approaching it as if it were a court case, could not deny the accuracy and, more importantly, the truth of the Bible. We have Micah on the line. Micah, welcome to Raw Talk. What do you have to say?
Hey, how's it going, guys? How are you tonight?
Good. What do you have to share with us tonight, Micah?
I actually wanted to address John. He called in earlier. Is that all right?
Yeah, go ahead, real quick.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, just real quick, he was mentioning the Africans and the condoms and all that. Well, I had the privilege of living in Africa for 9 years, and my parents were missionaries over there. And so one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in my life is that these guys would come in with, they had gone to the doctors and they had been tested HIV positive. And so they come in with AIDS and they get saved, they give their life to Jesus Christ, and we prayed for them. And they go back to the hospitals and they get tested again, and they were HIV negative. And even a bunch of these, the AIDS orphans, it was incredible. They'd grow up in the church and the AIDS would just mysteriously disappear. And one of the most absolutely incredible things that I've ever witnessed in my entire life was these guys getting healed from AIDS. And so what I wanted to say to John was, you know, yeah, sure, maybe a lot of people are preaching condoms, but while your answer is condoms, our answer is God. And God doesn't look for an answer. He is the answer. And I just wanted to say that real quick because I was an eyewitness. And I think that holds tremendous, tremendous weight.
Well, going to the Bible, Dr. Sala, I mean, how are we supposed to deal with this issue of miracles in the Bible? You know, people look at that and they think, well, that just proves that these are mythological stories. I mean, how do we handle those issues of miracles when it comes to having confidence in the fact that the Bible is factual and true.
Well, you see, it's just part and parcel of a whole bag of things that all fit together. For example, Larry King, talk show host, CNN, they pay the guy a lot to sit there and talk, you know. I hope they pay you a lot, too. But anyway, probably not as much as he gets.
Yeah, no.
One of his guests turned the tables on him one day, and he said, "Now, look, if you were going to interview somebody from history, who would you like to interview?" He quickly said, "Jesus Christ." And he said, "Why?" He said, "I would ask him one question. Are you indeed virgin born?" Now, you see, the virgin birth of Christ, miracles, fulfilled prophecy, all of these smack of the supernatural. And to acknowledge that there is a supernatural means that there has to be a God who is above nature, who on occasion suspends the natural laws of cause and effect to accomplish what he wants. We call it a miracle. Now, miracles are not commonplace. Yet there is the commonplace miracle of the order that we have in our universe. I mean, we live in an orderly universe. The sun's 93 million miles away, moon 229,000 miles out there. And the fact that God operates this whole thing and there is cause and effect, and if he suspended those laws of thermodynamics, man, we'd all be toasted in no time at all. So, you see, the Bible is a supernatural book. So why should we say this great God who did all of these wonderful things could not reveal his purpose for our lives because he created us? And he is not an arbitrary bully out there with a big stick ready to clobber us when we get out of line. To the contrary, he knows how you can find the greatest happiness, and that's what you have in this book called the Bible.
Yeah, and that also goes back to just the miracle of how the Bible was formed, the fact that it could be written over so many centuries by so many different people with so many different backgrounds and yet have a very consistent theme. I really liked your example of the marble that you use in your book and how miraculous that would be. Why don't you elaborate on that illustration? It was a great illustration for the Bible.
Well, I would, Joe, and I have to tell you, I thought that went up myself.
Oh, well, good job, because I thought it was brilliant.
There's no such thing as originality, but when I was sitting there contemplating how this thing came together. Okay, St. Petersburg, you have one of the great museums there in St. Petersburg in Russia, the Hermitage. I love that museum. I'm looking forward to going back and ministering in St. Petersburg so I can spend more than a half a day there. But let's suppose the director of the Hermitage sent out word to 40 individuals who did not know what the other person had, the kind of message he had received. And he told them that he wanted them to bring a piece of marble and bring it to the Hermitage at a specific date. Okay, some guy has this monstrous piece flown in on a 747. That's like the book of Isaiah. And somebody else has a very small piece. That's like Philemon or Obadiah. And somebody has a larger piece. And some are polished and some... And then you take all of these and you put them together. And there is a beautiful collage. You would say, hey, this could not have happened. It's absolutely incredible, impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the odds are just the same when 40 men over a period of 1,600 years penned manuscripts and they fit together. One does not contradict the other. They are historically accurate, different kinds of literature, but they form a beautiful collage. And if I had to disregard the manuscript evidence, the testimony of archaeology, the fact that what the Bible says of a scientific nature is absolutely accurate, though it isn't a book on science, it's a book on living, that I'd have to say any one of these would speak to my heart, this is no ordinary book.
Yeah, and that was a great illustration. I thought it summed up the miracle of how the Bible came together really, really well. We have Chrissy on the line. Chrissy, welcome to Raw Talk. And what do you have to say, Chrissy?
Hi, I actually learned this in English the other day, a couple months ago, that actually the Bible is the top-selling book of all time, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Well, if there are so many people, the majority of the world, that don't believe in it, why is it the most bought-in book, you know?
Well, that is a very good question. What do you think, Dr. Zaylor?
Well, there's something about this book. They know that it is different. Some people think of it like an amulet or a charm. Well, I think I should have a Bible in my home. You know, this is a, quote, Christian country, which it's not really anymore.
Right.
But the Bible sustains its greatest damage not from its enemies outside the gate, but by its neglect from those of us who are just not sure, who do not read it. I mean, let's suppose you went to a third-year chemistry class, and middle of the semester you went in and you sat down and you started to listen. It wouldn't make any sense to you, because you need what comes, very simple things. And that's why even my first chapter in the book takes a look at this whole thing, how it fits together and gives you some feel of what it's all about. Then you go deeper, and you begin to understand the complexity of it and the great truth. But God gave his word not to intellectuals in an ivory tower someplace, but to ordinary people. And that is one of the reasons why in writing this thing, I've made it very simple. It is not for the scholar. It's for ordinary people. There's a lot of readability. It flows, and I've got anecdotal stories that make it come alive, and some of which that I stumbled across in writing that I hadn't read anybody else where they had written about it the same way, including some of the details of the Isaiah manuscripts and the Dead Sea Scrolls that are really fascinating. So you need to take a look at the whole thing and then dig in. And the greater your appreciation of this book, the greater will be your personal faith. And everything we know about God, other than the fact he must be powerful out there. But if you only look at nature, you'd say this God is a bully. I mean, look, he's look at the typhoons, or you look at the hurricane, or you look at all the rest of this thing. Look at the earthquakes. I mean, this and children who suffer. Well, of course children suffer. I mean, it's a complex issue, but it isn't what we don't understand that should bother us the most. It's not doing what we know we ought to do that we often do not do. Well, that's a good observation.
Yeah, that's a great observation, Chrissy, and thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
All right, you have a good night, all right?
You too.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Up next, we have Caleb on the line. Caleb, welcome to Raw Talk, and how would you like to end our show this evening?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
I just wanted to just point out a couple of things about just the general validity of the Bible. I took a course just recently by Christopher Gornald Smith, and it was talking about Old Testament survey, but in it he was just talking about the different ways that the Bible was translated, and that from ancient manuscripts it was taken by a scribe, and that they would transpose everything exactly verbatim the way that it was written on these scrolls. And then they would go back and count the number of words that were in each scroll, and if they were different, they would burn the scroll and start over again until they matched exactly. And, I mean, that to me just speaks of how thorough that everybody was in the past about preserving the validity of the Bible, because I know that so many people nowadays say, you know, it's 2,000 years old, it's not really accurate, how could it have been preserved for so long? And just hearing that was really eye-opening to me about what great lengths were gone to preserve the original state of the Bible.
Randy, the group of scribes that you mentioned were called Masoretes, and they were Jews. There were two schools, one in Tiberias and the other in Caesarea. And it was a period of about 500 years. And here's the story behind that. When the New Testament books were written, those documents seemed to kind of supplant some of the Old Testament books. And so Jews were afraid that the Old Testament would be swept aside by this new stuff. So subsequently, they dedicated their lives to codifying, to adding vowels and consonant to the Hebrew text. They did us a great, great favor, because the New Testament was simply birthed in the cradle of the Old. And so we owe them a great debt of gratitude. But it's really an amazing story how God raised up individuals. I know we're running out of time, but I got to mention just one thing.
Yeah.
You know, people said, well, the book has been translated so many times, how do you know? And then in the 19th and 20th century, when science was coming into its own, God gave us two discoveries that I think absolutely had to be part of his order and purpose. One was the discovery of the Sinai Bible down in the Negev at St. Catherine's, where you had a German scholar who he must have really been something, because he knew that if he could go and he could find these old documents and compare them with the modern ones, you could tell immediately whether or not it had been corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And so Constantine von Tischendorf made three trips to St. Catherine's. On his third, he was about to give up. He was leaving the next morning when he took a walk with a monk, and the monk said, I too have read the Septuagint, kind of tongue-in-cheek. So he took him to his cloister, and as they were having tea, he went over and he unwrapped an old bundle wrapped in red cloth, and it was the Sinai Bible. and it has been dated about 325 A.D., both the Old and New Testaments in Greek. But you compare that then with other documents, and you see that this one written 325 A.D. is essentially the same as the Hebrew text that is commonly used in the 21st century today. And then the second, of course, is the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
40 caves produce over 800 documents, portions of every Old Testament book with the exception of Esther. And we have also made discoveries of the Gospel of John, dated 125 A.D., that take us almost back to one generation of when John wrote that. And then even a portion of Mark, which came out of one of the caves in the Dead Sea, or the Dead Sea, in the Masada Dead Sea area, was a portion of Mark that is dated about 50 A.D. So that takes us right back to the generation when the New Testament writers wrote those books. And by comparing these, we realize it has been passed through generations. And there were schools, four basic areas, Rome, Constantinople, you had one in Alexandria in Egypt, and then, of course, in Caesarea. And those manuscripts that were written there all follow a certain pattern. So you can compare them, and subsequently, whole sciences developed of biblical accuracy going back, and we now have confidence that we've recovered at least 99.5% of the words that were in the original. Somebody said if it were a 500-page document, there would be fewer than maybe one half of one page of words that would be disputed. Very, very few. Nothing of substance.
It's absolutely it's just incredible how accurate the Bible has come to us over the centuries. And Dr. Salem, author of Why You Can Have Confidence in the Bible. Again, real quick, why don't you give everyone your website so they can find out more about your ministry and perhaps are curious about finding out more about your book. Where can they learn more about that?
I'd like to, and thank you so much for the privilege of chatting with you. First of all, you can go to www.confidenceinthebible.com. And there you can see excerpts of some of the various chapters, an overview of what's the book about. Or you can go to our website, www.guidelines.org, and you can see the same thing there, find out a little more about guidelines and how you can go ahead and get the book. I would like you to know that my wife and I take nothing from the sale of our books, but we use the proceeds to print, like in Myanmar, where we have just released number 6 and 7 books, for China, Ukraine, various countries of the world where they do not have the resources that we do. So subsequently, the book is being translated now into Spanish. It will be released by Vita. It's being considered for translation in both French and German. We're translating into Russian. But, friend, it is for you that I wrote this. And I really challenge you, go through this thing. It will change your life. If you have a study group and you would like to use it, there will be a study guide on our website in the next 24 hours, and you can download that in PDF format, and you can go through it a chapter at a time. You can talk about it and then apply it to your life.
Well, Dr. Salem, thank you so much for hanging out with me here on Raw Talk. It's been a big blessing. We covered a lot of territory and barely got into any of the details that I have, like, a whole right here. Got a whole list of things that I wanted to get into, but
you'll be glad to do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Hang on just a second, Dr. Salem. I want to say goodbye to you right after I wrap things up here on the show. So hold on, all right?
Okay,
all right.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Dr. Salem of Why You Can Have Confidence in the Bible. It's such a crucial issue. And again, I cannot emphasize enough that you need to know why you believe the Bible is the Word of God. And if you aren't sure about that, now is the time to figure that out, because as we move further and further into the end times, there are going to be more and more deceptions, illusions, confusions that will try to lure us away. And if we don't know what is true, we will never know what is false. And so please investigate it. Find out why you believe the Bible is the Word of God. And if you aren't sure, you can go to Dr. Salem's website. You can come to us here at M88. We will help you out. We actually have a project coming up called the Truth Project that's going to go over some of these same type of issues. Why do you believe what you believe? Why do you think what is real? How do you know what you think is real is really real? These are very important issues, and I hope you'll investigate them for yourself and find out so that you will not be led astray. Next week on Raw Talk, a very special time, we're going to talk a little bit about martyrs, people who have died for the truth of God's word. Why would anyone do such a thing? We're going to take a closer look at that and how it's still relevant for our lives today. That'll be next Sunday on Rod Talk. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I hope you have a shway evening in the Lord.